Hello and welcome. This is the Outspoken Beauty Podcast. I'm Nicola Bonn. And in this episode, I'm speaking to two really different and equally fascinating guests. Now, first of all, I'm chatting to Leighton Denny, MBE. I read Leighton's book recently and I had to meet him.
Can you imagine what your face would look like if you neglected it like you have your nails? So can you imagine if you just picked your face instead of washing it on a morning?
Now, in the second part of the podcast, I did a live debate with a woman called Karen Barlow. Now, she's the founder of this really interesting new skincare brand called Immunecology. Now, Immunecology is totally clean. Everything in it is toxin-free, as pure can be. It's natural. Karen is absolutely passionate about clean skincare.
When we're putting products together and we're talking about clean, we have to understand what is and how are those ingredients going to give our skin results.
Now, after my two chats, I've got a few recommendations as ever for you. And I really want to talk to you about the most amazing gel manicure I had done, because I asked for something a bit different and it was wonderful. So I think you should do it too. But let's get into the conversations now. And here's the moment I met with the lovely Leighton Denny, MBE. So I'm going to call you Leighton Denny, MBE, because that's what you are.
Okay.
How does it feel being an MBE?
I don't like look in the mirror and think, oh, you're an MBE. You know, it's how does it feel to be an MBE? And it was just all a really big surprise and it were an honour.
Your life started off, you were a forklift driver.
That's right.
And you put in the back of your book, you were a dyslexic forklift driver.
Yeah, that's right. I was dyslexic. I left school. I would have been about 14 and a half, 15.
Very young to leave school.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend that. And I wouldn't say that's been a secret to my success either. But I was lucky. My parents realised that school weren't working. They weren't identifying. I was sort of being put into a pigeonhole of being a naughty child because I was disruptive because I didn't really understand.
Yeah.
So my dad decided to take me out of school and get me private education, which was so good. I mean, he worked nights, he worked really hard. And I don't come from a wealthy family or anything like that. And he got me a private tutor to really knuckle it down and make me... Because, I mean, I was 14 and a half and I could only write my name.
Blimey.
So by the time I were 18 and a half, I were fully reading and writing. And I went on a course called Sight and Sound Education, which taught me how to use a computer.
But I think when you were younger... They didn't know as much about dyslexia, did they? I mean,
I don't even think there were such a thing.
These days they're on the lookout for it, aren't they?
You were just thick.
Yeah, and
in my early day, you were just classed as thick.
Which is terrible. I know. Absolutely terrible.
Yeah.
So you had that very difficult start at school. Your dad got you a private tutor. Then how did the forklift track happen?
That again, purely by accident. It wasn't like I decided I wanted to become a forklift truck driver, but I'd gone from dead-end job to dead-end job. It's, you know, like I worked at Grattan Catalogue, putting things in envelopes, and I worked doing lots of different, I worked for a security company doing data input. Data input sounds a lot better than what it would be, basically scanning a parcel and pressing return. And I would just, going from dead-end job to dead-end job and not really being inspired. So my sister run a recruitment agency in Bradford, and there was a new big warehouse opening in Bradford where they trained you to become a forklift truck driver and paid you. At the time, when you think, you know, underneath this glamour that you're looking at, there's the really old man.
Yeah.
At the time, I were earning around £275 a week, which was an amazing wage.
Yeah. And to be trained. Yeah, yeah.
So I decided to go for it, and I ended up doing training in reach, counterbalance and man rise, so I could actually drive anything in a warehouse. It's funny because when I go to my warehouse, if there's an order that's running late and there's no forklift truck drivers around, I can load it on the back of the wagon myself.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. So do you think that the Leighton of those days, your core values are still the same, you've just applied them in a different way, or do you think you've kind of grown and grown and grown, or both?
A little bit of both. I've definitely grown. Remember, I was born in Bradford in West Yorkshire, in a little town, population 500,000. That's where I went to school, that's where I grew up. Going to Leeds, which would be about 15 miles away, were like a big adventure to go to Leeds. So obviously moving to London, that opened my eyes and also educated me in a lot of things that wasn't important living up in the north. But I really think that my core values, I've got my parents to thank for my manners, I've got my parents to thank for my patience, I've got my parents to thank for always being there. They still are today.
Yep.
My parents are still there. And I think that is really what has given me my values and kept me on the straight and narrow. Because as you've read in my book, when I first came to London and then I hit the media, and the media just welcomed me with open arms.
Yep.
And I had a full page Vogue, three pages, at least with the same month.
And is this when you opened up your first proper nail destination?
Yes.
In London?
Well, it was a nail and beauty salon. It was in Marylebone High Street, and I launched it in 99.
Yep.
And by 2001, it was the hot spot in London. I mean, I had everybody visiting. Mylene Klass and the Hearsay Lot were all coming. I had all the, whoever the latest relevant people at the time were, somehow they ended up in my salon, to the point of where paparazzi used to be basically outside the salon every single day just to see who were going to come, because I'd have people like such as John Collins, you know, Patsy Palmer, Patsy Kensit, lots of different reality stars.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember when Helen from Big Brother, do you remember Helen
of
from
course
the very
I remember
first
Helen.
Big Brother?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She came and it was just like crazy out there. It was like weird because there were more paparazzi than what there were for Joan Collins.
Really?
Yeah.
What, I always wonder, I mean, when you're doing someone's nails, you are pretty much holding their hands.
Yeah.
And it's also, because I was talking to Sarah Chapman about this, when she does a facial.
Love Sarah.
She's lovely. Yeah, she's really, really amazing. But it's very intimate because you're leaning over someone's face. However, they've normally got their eyes closed. But when you're dealing with someone's nails, you are holding their hand. They have their eyes open. It's very intimate. I mean, how did you feel holding Joan Collins' hand?
Well, the first time I actually went to her house, it was a daughter, Tara Newley, that came to the salon and then recommended me to her mother. And I actually, she said, would you be able to go to the house to do it? And I'll never forget, because I felt a little bit sick, because she was like John Collins, you know, Dynasty. I used to watch Dynasty when I laid on the sofa with my mum when I was like, I don't want to go to bed. You know, I was like, can I stay up and watch Dynasty? And I remember the fight with her, and you know, with Alexis and the Chris Stirl and all this sort of thing. And I remember I arrived, I think it was the appointment were at 1 o'clock, and I arrived at 5 to 1 and I pressed the button and said, hi, I'm here to see John. And she went, you're early, please wait.
Oh.
Honestly, I felt like I was going to die right in that moment. But she, no, she were lovely and they were great. And I found that once you meet, you know, my first few celebrities, I used to be a little bit nervous, but then moving forward, they're just normal people.
I love your story about how your ambition was to do Kate Moss's nails.
Yes.
And so tell me more about that.
Well, it was so funny because I had Fran Cutler, obviously, Kate's best friend, agent, come. I think she's just always been around in Kate's career. And I'd always wanted to do Kate Moss. At this stage, I was working full-time as a session technician. And I were doing Meg Matthews for free. I were doing Fran Cutler for free.
Oh, we've got Meg in on the podcast, actually.
She's, oh, have you?
Yeah, lovely.
Yeah, she's lovely. Yeah. So I had them all around her. All
so like, it was the Primrose Hill set, wasn't it?
All of them coming. Because obviously I were in Marylebone as well, so it were easy for them to get to me.
Yeah.
And so they were all coming in. And I was like, I want Kate, I want Kate, I want Kate. And I did them all for about a year. And then I sort of moved away from working in the salon and working with celebrities to focus more on brand development and product development. One day I get booked for a photo shoot. It was for then Harper's and Queen, which is now Harper's Bazaar magazine.
Yeah.
And it was for, sadly, Alexander McQueen. It was a feature about him. The cover story was called God Save McQueen.
I remember it. I remember it.
It had skin from Skunk and Nancy, Vanessa Redgrave. I didn't know who were turning up. And then towards the end of the day, in she bounced, Kate Moss. And I had been waiting for decades to get, and you won't believe it, I can't remember who the makeup artist was at the time, but the makeup artist said, oh, we've got Leighton here to do your nails. And she went, oh, do I have to have my nails done?
No.
We're like, so close, but so far away. And I'm thinking, how can I get around this? And I said, well, why don't I just, like, you know, just put a little bit of top coat and just fluff them up, so they look nice. And she went, okay then.
Yes.
I was like, yes, I got the picture. And there we go. She was on the list.
Amazing. So you can now say, I've done Kate Moss's nails. And it's funny because I think even just having that name on the list, it all goes to enhance you as a brand, doesn't it?
That's,
I mean,
right.
It really does. But there's more to you than, you know, just a few celebrity names, because yes, that's impressive, but there's a reason why they came to you.
Well, obviously, my experience. Back then, I was specialising just in nails. Even though I am a beauty therapist, I trained as a beauty therapist. So I was doing the odd leg wax, the odd eyebrow and eyebrow tint, if you know, if I had an opening in my diary and all the girls in the beauty salon were busy, because I had a hair salon, a beauty salon, and a nail salon on three floors. I mean, this is 99. I even had a sunbed area with sunbeds. Can you believe it? Because it was 99, we didn't know then.
But I think people still use them.
Well, there's just such good self-tanning brands on the market now. You don't need to do that.
I know.
So I'm just saying that was the era.
Yeah, well, of course. I mean, everyone was at it then. Yeah,
everyone. We had stand up, lay down. We had everything. So I had a full beauty centre.
Did you own this beauty centre?
I owned it. I had a flat above. Yeah, it was a 5-story building. Yeah. So I was very lucky. I was very lucky. And my dad brought the builders down from Bradford and they helped me to get the first floor open. So I opened one floor and then eventually opened a second and a third and a fourth. And that salon was really what got me known. That got me my features in all the big publications. I mean, I even ended up in the Times with this salon. I had a full column in the Times and It was it's funny because it's funny that we're talking, because I never talk about this now, because I don't work with celebrities anymore. I don't do nails anymore.
No,
I haven't done for years.
I know.
And it's funny that you take me back, because people often ask me a question. When was your happiest time?
Do you know, I was just going to say that, and I'm getting the impression you're about to say that time.
When I think back in life, I mean, that's my busiest. I mean, I had every single job in that salon. I would sometimes be the cleaner when she didn't show up. I'd have to do reception when the reception didn't show up. I'd have a full list of clients. I'd be jumping in doing a leg wax, an eyebrow shape, a manicure, a pedicure, a full set of nail extensions. I was booking clients in late at night. I was working 6 days a week in order to keep the salon to the right level.
Because but it was yours.
It was mine.
Yeah.
But when I look at it, the amount of time, I didn't go on holiday for 2 years. Mm. I worked 6 days a week. But I was the happiest I've ever been. Yeah, I mean, I am happy now. Don't get me wrong. I'm not an unhappy
person. But it's a different happy. I think a lot of people are at their happiest when they've had a dream and they're really just getting there. And it's that exciting
buzz.
That
was my dream. If you've read my book, my dream was to open a central London salon. Yeah. That was my dream.
And you did
so it. So I was living the dream. I mean, now I've excelled. It's so funny because people say, what's next? I'm like, I don't know. I didn't expect to be where I am today.
I know.
You know, I were happy 10, 15 years ago. Well, no, 20 years ago. Oh, gosh.
I was talking to my friend about this. Like, when you look back, I look back when I started in radio and I realised I've been doing it for nearly 20 years. And I suddenly, it's the same kind of thing. I just thought, No, I'm still 25, I think. No, I'm actually not. I'm nearly 40. I'm like, how has that happened, you know?
Stop biting your nails.
Oh, my God, I can't believe I just did that.
Excuse me.
Do you know what? I just bit my nail, because do you know why I bit my nail? I was thinking about a really, really bad experience I had at a manicure, and I was getting stressed thinking about it. Go on.
It's usually, don't bite your nails. That's self-cannibalism.
All right, let's start. I'm going to ask you a few bits of advice. I actually do need to have nice nails in a month's time because they're going to be on television. And where do I start? So I've got weak nails. They're bendy. They break really easily. All I have to do is wash my hair and they're broken.
Right.
What do I do with them?
Let me have a look.
Oh, God, here we go. They're really awful. And I also have sausage fingers, apparently.
Right. First of all, you don't use a nail file. Yeah.
No.
I can tell that because that's the way that, because you've got to seal the edge. So I would say the first thing you need is a crystal nail file.
Yes, which I do have. I just don't use very much.
Use it. You need to seal the edges of your nails. If you imagine, if you don't, I think you've just been clipping them, haven't you, and leaving them, or maybe having a little chew as well by the looks of
maybe.
It. So when you tear, when you chew or when you clip, for instance, you leave the nail edge open and there's three main layers and moisture gets in between and that's what causes them to peel.
Okay.
So the crystal nail file will seal the edge, so it makes it watertight on the edge. Find a good nail treatment that's going to work for you, but you don't necessarily have to have long nails in order to have glamorous nails as well.
Yeah, that's true.
You know,
the dream is to have not long, but to have, like, my mum's always had these amazing nails that are always painted brick red. That's been this, she's been an icon all my life because her hands are so beautiful. And then I'm born with these short little stubby fingers and these awful nails. So I do want them to be
nice. You've got nice nails and fingers. I mean, can you imagine what your face would look like if you neglected it like you have your nails? So can you imagine if you just picked your face instead of washing it on a morning?
Yeah.
I mean, when was the last time you put in a nail oil on?
I put on a lot of moisturiser.
That's meant for what? Your
my
body?
Hands. My
yeah,
hands.
It's hand cream.
Yes.
You put on a lot of hand
cream.
Yeah, nails and hand cream, hand and nail creams, I've always thought that you need a specialist treatment for your nails. But can you imagine if, like this morning, you would have washed your face and you've moisturised and cleansed and toned
and
tonight when you get in, you'll do that.
And probably a face mask,
exactly. But yet your hands, they just get left to the elements.
They do.
Especially this time of year, they're going from you know, cold weather to central heating, they're getting hot and cold. You know, you've got to think about having something like a nail oil at least, just basic, a crystal nail file and some nail oils.
Yeah.
Now, for your event, for instance, there's loads of things you could do. You could, if you wanted to have longer nails, you can have, you know, you can have gel nails done or acrylic nails.
I find that the effect after is they're always so weak. Whatever I do, gels or whatever.
But how do you remove them?
I do go back to the salon to get it done.
Oh, to get them removed.
Yeah, yeah, but they often do it with a stick and they seem to really scrape.
Yeah, that's the thing. So then probably just go for a gel polish because you know that you're going to get that long-lasting effect. It's going to last up to 10 days, hopefully longer, and they're going to be good for your event.
Yeah.
And then have your gel polish taken off and go back to a treatment. But that's what you need to do. You need to be looking at what your nail type is.
Yeah.
What treatment you need for that, and you need to stick to that treatment.
What kind of treatment do you recommend? I mean, generally.
I mean, a good nail oil. Everybody should be using it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like using a good moisturiser. It's like using a good day cream.
Yeah.
And having a good day night cream, because obviously your night cream doesn't have any protection. Your day cream has protection, which would be for your face.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You need to think about that for your hands as well. If a hand cream is a hand cream, it's for the hand. If you want to do something for the nails, you have to get a specialist treatment that's for your nail type. Most people think, oh, I've got weak nails, so I need to get a strengthener. That's not always the case, because some nails don't need to be stronger because there is actually strength in flexibility.
Yeah.
So if you make them too strong or too hard, they actually become brittle. So you end up with a different nail problem because you've been using the wrong treatment. So it's good to find a manicurist, maybe book yourself for 5 manicures over the next 5 weeks just to get you in the tune of having good nails.
Yeah.
And then you can move on. You can move on from there with your treatments, doing things at home. There's so many products on the market now. You can do your own gels at home now.
Yeah.
You know, and I was all against doing professional products at home, but now they've actually made it so that it really is.
The technology's there. Finally, just to kind of round this off, what advice would you give to someone? Because, I mean, you could argue you've come from nothing to everything. Some people might say that. I don't really see it like that. You've come from a beautiful family who have supported you, given you love.
People always talk about this rags to riches.
Yeah.
I came from a really loving family,
yes,
really supporting family. They would go get a night job in order to support something that I'd have a passion to do, just because I think with my dyslexia and also with me not getting any qualifications from school. I mean, I've got loads of qualifications now.
Yeah.
I didn't get any when I left school. And I think my mum and dad just sort of just were worried that I wasn't going to find my way. And as a teenager, I was like a teenager, an average teenager in Yorkshire. And I did go down the wrong path a couple of times.
Yeah, most teenagers do.
When I actually found something that I wanted to do, I just went for it. And I'm like a horse with blinkers. I'm tunnel visioned. Once I've got my mind set on something, it's like I'm obsessed and I can't stop researching, looking into ingredients, looking into things and making sure that whatever it is that I bring to market is always going to be something that gets noticed. And also, I've never been one for using too many famous names and things like that. Mm. Even though I've got a massive celebrity client list and most have become very good friends, I try to make the formulations become the celebrity.
Yeah.
I try to make the product become the celebrity. And I think that with this celebrity angle and everything now, where a lot of people are doing faces, I don't think the public's really buying into that anymore now.
No.
They want to know about the formulations.
They want to know that they're spending their hard-earned money on something that's going to work.
And they're not just buying packaging.
No. You've been a pleasure and an inspiration. Thank you.
The pleasure's all mine, honestly.
Now, Karen Barlow, a very, very different personality to Leighton, is going to chat about why she thinks clean skincare is really important. She's going to chat about her fabulous brand, Immunecology, and also about how she's incorporated wellness into her life. Well, you can hear the background noise that we're not doing a normal podcast in a quiet studio today. We are doing a live podcast at the fabulous Wolf and Badger in King's Cross. Karen, hello.
Hello,
Nicola.
Go on,
let's have a whoop from the audience. Now, so Karen is the founder of Immunecology, which was a skincare brand I didn't know about until recently, and it has a fascinating story. Karen, you're a fascinating woman. And we're doing such a big debate today. The debate is the future of skincare clean? This is a huge... I mean, we could be here for months, but we only have about 20 minutes.
That's right, we could be. But hello, and so happy to share with your audience as well.
Yes, And I think my audience is going to be very interested in this because we're kind of on the verge of a movement, I think, or maybe we're in a movement. The clean skincare movement is taking off. More and more people are becoming obsessed about what they eat, being clean, a lot of veganism, and what they put on their faces as well. And I suppose let's start at the very beginning. What is clean skincare? Does it even have a meaning yet?
Well, I think it's not a made-up word for sure. It's really about what are those ingredients going into our skincare products. And clean is, are they chemically driven? Are they natural ingredients? And natural meaning, natural organic? Are they about the food that we eat? And is that food going in? Are the nuts and the oils and those berries and those flowers, are those the ingredients of clean? Right? That's what we're really thinking about today.
Yeah, so as opposed to chemicals, I think people get a bit confused. There's organic skincare.
Yeah.
There's natural skincare. And now there's this new word, clean. Now, clean, as I understood it, was that it doesn't have toxins in it.
Yeah, that's pretty much what they're saying. You know, things that are going to be carcinogenic, because there's been many, many ingredients out there in our industry that have been found after being and after using them that are carcinogenic, which means that they're going to be some form of cancer-causing ingredients. And then it's like, whoa, how come we didn't know about this before? So that opens up a whole big can of worms as to what's happened in the cosmetic industry and why clean has become such a very important word to our industry.
And I know it's a very important word to you, just mentioning the word cancer, and I know you don't mind sharing your story, but your product came about because you suffered. You had cancer. Tell me a bit more about that.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Having spent my career in the cosmetic industry, I've been around all these chemicals and all of these products and been working on formulations. And one of the things I always believed in is almost the way that I shop in a grocery store. I walk around the outer portion of a store where all the fresh fruits and vegetables are. And so in skincare, it was very difficult because I say the old is actually new, because the old theory of working with ingredients today are those ingredients that are ingredients that came from centuries ago. But what happened along the way with my illness is that I became part of the movement of where working on formulas, we only had certain types of ingredients to use. And 10 years ago, I got diagnosed with Hodgkin's. And I realized at that time, you know, my skin, not only did it change because I was on chemo, then I went for radiation.
Yeah.
And I do get a little emotional on that because it was a hard time in my life.
Yeah.
And I have four children, and that was a hard time. And I thought the most important thing was to get healthy.
Yeah.
How was I going to get healthy? So it mattered what I ate. It mattered what I put on my skin. But I also knew that I had a whole industry out there who had people going through the same thing that I was going through. And so skincare, to me at that moment, was how do I take and how do I make a product for consumers? Not just a product for cancer patients, but a product for those of us who are out there wanting to have a healthy skincare line.
So you got into the nitty-gritty of natural, clean ingredients.
Yes.
And I really want to talk to you about green clay quickly, because just mention to me how green clay became a part of your cancer journey.
Yeah, it's so fascinating, because 2 years before I got diagnosed, I actually was working with French green clays, and I've been working with a lot of technologies in our industry and working with formulations, and 2 years prior to being diagnosed, someone had come to me with the French green clay and asked me if I could really do some homework on that and get to learn more about it and to see the value of the green clay. So I did. And so what we did is we created an ionic exchange from the clay by pulling out the hard minerals and keeping in the 12 essential minerals. And so we had a clay water. And in that clay water, I got to see how it worked. And it was amazing for me because it was clean at that time.
You
that
drank
was,
it.
Yeah, right? And it was 12 years ago. And I started to drink it.
And it now forms the basis of your entire product range, Immunecology, which we will come back to in a minute. I want to get back to our debate quickly. So we've kind of discussed the fact that you think that certain ingredients, non-clean ingredients, can harm us. If we go the clean beauty route,
in a way we can trust? Is this a matter of trust, really?
It is a trust, because there's a lot of factors out there that of science, right? We know that a lot of these chemicals that we use are driven by science. Well, clean can also be about science, and that's, I think, that's where the myth is. They think that clean can't work, clean maybe isn't effective.
Yeah, because I know that when I see skincare that says it's natural or organic, I'll often think, okay, number one, is it really? Like, what are the ingredients in this? Because in the beauty industry, you can make claims, and we all know this, you can make claims. And when you look in the nitty-gritty of the ingredients list, those claims aren't always backed up. If we're saying, is the future of skincare clean, what about other members of the industry who say, this is clean, I'm making something clean? How are we ever going to know if we can trust them or not? Because this is the problem for me. If the clean skincare can work with people like you, you know, it works. How do we know it'll work with other brands?
Well, I think I'll go back to the science, right? I think this is where we have to ask the question. You know, when you have an ingredient list, a lot of times people can read it and say, I don't know what to make of this. Yeah. But there are three parts to an ingredient list, and this could be very helpful to your audience. And the top part of the ingredient list, so if you broke it down into three segments, you have your most active ingredients at the top. So that could be your first 5, 6, 7 ingredients. Usually, by the way, it's your first 3, 4, 5. Then you have your component of the middle, where there's a little bit more of that activity. But when you start getting too many ingredients into that middle part, the formula doesn't know what to do.
The alarm bells start ringing if there's a huge list.
Right. So you've got to keep it simple, and especially in clean beauty. You don't want to have every flower and herb in that product.
No.
You need it to be very direct and very specific. And then you come with your preservative system. Now, in clean beauty, sometimes that is where you have oils that will act as a preservative system.
Which we need. We have to have preservatives
you
in
have
our skincare,
to have preservatives.
Otherwise it goes off.
And if you have any water in the product, you must. Now, some people, because oils have an ability to stabilize for a little longer, but they do go rancid. So when you start putting fingers into jars, you know, or you have a product that lasts a long time, that oil can start to get rancid.
Yeah.
So that causes other issues. So because you don't want bacteria on your skin.
No, so
preservatives are so very important.
And also the bottles. I mean, your bottles are great. I think you've got to, when you're looking at ingredients like this, you have to study all the aspects.
Yes.
What
yes.
they're in, what's in them. I mean, maybe we should all be asking questions of everything we put on our faces. And I think the more honest and transparent companies are, the better. And actually, maybe that's something we need to link here. Clean beauty and transparency. Maybe they need to go hand in hand.
I think it does. I think one of the things is that there's a lot of us who love products. We love flowers. We love, you know, cooking. And we've turned that cooking into putting together a skincare brand. But we have to know skin, too, when we're putting a brand together, right? When we look at skin and we understand that there are two very important parts to skin, and that is the water and the oil. So when we're putting products together and we're talking about clean, we have to understand what is and how are those ingredients going to give our skin result.
Yeah.
A result is what we're looking for.
Yeah.
And so even though, and I think that's where the confusion comes in, Nicola, about, okay, I can see all these nice, clean beauty brands out there, but how effective is it going to be for my skin?
Yeah, so maybe for the future of skincare to be clean, people are going to need to invest in the technology and the research to enable them to use the ingredients and harness the power of the ingredients in the right way.
Yes.
I want to ask you, I mean, your skin is glowing and your
Thank
son
you.
Is here as well. Hello,
yes.
Ryan. And Ryan, I mean, his skin is like glass. It's beautiful. And I know, what do you have any tips of like how, you know, I know obviously you're going to recommend immunology, but what are your lifestyle tips? What are your, if you had to give your top 5 tips on products or lifestyle choices, what would they be?
You know, I hate to say that I had to have cancer to live well.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that living well means you can't have fun.
Yes.
Right? That's the one part about life, is that you have to enjoy life, and you have to enjoy the people around you. It's so precious, and that's one key factor that I really, really learned. So I want to say that being able to understand how to live well means not to be so focused just on yourself, but to be focused on enjoying life, right? And so anything of too much, and there's been such a movement about clean beauty and about health. And so when I look at this for myself, I always keep that factor in mind, right? That I don't want to be obsessed. I guess that's the word I was looking for, is I don't want to be obsessed, but I do want to give these factors out. Is that for me, I love waking up in the morning and working out. Some people like to do it at night, but it's so important. Even if it's a half hour or 15 minutes, you have to do something. One is that you have to put some kind of circulation into your body. You've got to get that heart moving. You've got to make sure that your body has the ability to also detox. And when you're working out, you do that. You pour sweat. You let those toxins out, right? And then there's also the other part to that is your vitamins. What are you taking? I mean, I do vitamins every single day. Love turmeric. Love my vitamin B12, even though the list goes on. I mean, can always. I have a specific drink that I drink in the morning that's so important to me. But, you know, I think it's important for everyone to have a little bit of a checkpoint of what are we doing and how are we making a better life for ourselves.
Yeah.
And think about this, Nicola. People today are spending so much money on raw and on drinks, right? And getting those $5, $6, $10 or $10 drinks, right?
Yeah.
And we're spending so much time at the gym and getting the right clothes to be at the gym, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, the one area that I feel that's so important is as I collect all of this in my lifestyle, because I don't want to just talk about it. I want to do it. I wanted to be in the beauty business. So I decided to go to skincare school. I love walking the talk, but talking the walk. I love being able to be part of all of it, right?
Yeah.
I don't want to miss out on any of it. And when I share this with people, I want to make sure that people understand that clean isn't just clean when you drink it. Clean isn't just about working out. It's also about what you're doing for your skin.
I think Karen raised some really interesting points there. And, you know, whilst I have no problem with using synthetic ingredients on my skin, I really do get that there is no 100% proof that says that we're not absorbing the ingredients we put on our bodies and that in the long run it's not affecting us. No one can 100% prove that. So, yeah, Karen makes an interesting point. We shall see if the future of skincare is clean. So time for me to talk about a few products I've been trying and loving over the past few weeks. And one of them I have gone back in time with because this is the first cleanser I ever loved. And it is my Lizal Cleanse and Polish Hot Cloth Cleanser. If you haven't used it, you got to, because it is the cult staple. It was the first cleanser that you were meant to get off with a cloth and that really got rid of everything. It gets rid of eye makeup and it has got beautiful ingredients in it. And it just works and it makes your skin feel comfortable and it makes your skin look good. You can't go wrong with a bit of Lizal. So go to Boots or wherever, get a bottle. They're not too expensive. Pump it out and use it. And if you've got sensitive or dry skin, it's an absolute winner. Now, secondly, I had a gel manicure last week and I got them to do something just a little bit fun. I never do this normally, but I got them to paint my nails and then they got a nail polish that was full of glitter, and she very, very carefully with one of those little sticks got a separate bit of glitter, and they're quite big bits by the way, and just put it in the middle of the base of each nail. So I've got these deep maroon nails with a tiny little sparkly gold bit at the bottom, and they look very pretty. Very, very pretty indeed. So this is my new thing now. When I get a gel mani, I'm going to ask them to add something a bit creative. Maybe do a coloured line on each nail. Or I might, do you know what I want to do as well, is have a French mani, but in pink and red. I'm getting a bit crazy with my nails. It must be Leighton Denny's fault. Now, my final product of the episode is actually from the Immunecology range, because I wanted to try out the stuff that Karen believes in so much and see if it works for myself. And I must say that all the products were really, really lovely. But the one that I was the most impressed by was the cheapest, and it's their Vital Ionic Mist. You can use them whenever and wherever. They set your makeup. If you're on a plane, spray them liberally and they make your skin look really great and feel hydrated. You can even use them as part of your routine. This one's a little bit special though, because it's got clay in it, really, really nice clay. And it is just really, really comforting for the skin. It makes your skin look bright and glowy. It can reduce redness and inflammation. It is called their Vital Ionic Mist. And I think it could become a staple in my skincare routine. Just, I love it that much. One of the best face sprays I've ever used. So if you did want to look into the Immunology range, they actually sell it on Cult Beauty. They've got their own website and they're at Wolf and Badger in King's Cross. Do check it out, see what you think. And yeah, if you want to kind of start small, start with the spray. I think you'll love it. Now, the episode coming out on Wednesday, our midweek episode, is going to be a little bit different this time around. Cher and I are having a break for a week. We'll be back after that with more of your ultimate guide to makeup. This Wednesday's episode is very, very Christmassy. It's me, Sophie Beresina, and Lisa Potter-Dixon with a Backchat Beauty Christmas special. It's a bit raucous. There was Prosecco drunk during the recording. There's a warning. In the meantime, keep in touch. And the Instagram is at Outspoken Beauty Podcast. Outspokenbeauty.co.uk is the website. And do keep rating us and recommending us to everyone.